Hi, this is Justin.
This is Terry.
And this is Ryan. We're from the Dead Robot Society podcast at www.deadrobotsociety.com, and you're listening to episode 38 of Murder at Avedon Hill by P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 38 of Murder at Avedon Hill. Right now, I'm recording this on Christmas Day, and I hope to have this uploaded before the end of the night.
Wow, this is just awesome, PG.
Ah, T. Morris, everybody. What's awesome?
You! Getting an episode on time.
Oh, that. Well, thanks, T. So, as I was saying...
No, seriously. I believe you have finally learned from the Uber Nemesis. I mean, you've missed every release date you've ever set, right?
Yeah. I think I'm batting about 1,000 in that department.
And lo, the Uber Nemesis did look down upon P.G. Holyfield and tapped thee upon thy shoulder and proclaimed, "It's a Christmas miracle."
It's time for tea to go.
Moravi.net.
Bye, tea. And not to be too blasphemous, but it is sort of a Christmas miracle that this got done today. I want to thank my assistant producers, Scott Roche, Paulette Jackson, Stuart Boyles, and Charles Blanchard for editing down 2+ hours of audio into 30 minutes of narrative. Without their work last week, this episode would not have been finished. I want to thank this episode's guest voices, including Jay Lynn, Caroline Himmelman, Chris Johnson, and Brian Brown. There were several last-minute redos, and everyone came through for me during this holiday, busy, busy holiday season. There's no story so far or previously on segments this week. Just remember that last time our heroes believe they discovered who the murderer is and are now approaching that character's home. Stay tuned after the chapter for a couple Caroline calls and a couple holiday wishes. Lastly, thanks for taking the time to listen. Happy holidays to everyone and to those of you that celebrate the season. Merry Christmas. Now, episode 38 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 38. Callan's Work. The icon of Callan, child of destruction. Reynaud Fortus, named as Callan by his brother Dauphin, fell to his knees, surrounded by his burning fields. "Why do you deny yourself, Callan? Look, even the grasses bow down to you." The Return of the Children.
Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertee approached quietly and from the right edge of Father Joris's home, the angled advance meant to prevent Joris from seeing them through the open doorway. Both men had their weapons drawn, but as it turned out, their blades were unneeded. The home was empty. Aramis quickly searched the small dwelling but found nothing that linked the cleric to the child of Aj known as Artus, or to Greta Platt's murder.
"Where are you, Joris?"
A sense of urgency exploded within Aramis. "We need to find Lewis. Now." He nearly ran out of the house, heading towards the Avedon Hill Cemetery. as they neared the fork in the road that led one either to the western part of town or towards Avedon Manor, they were met by Richard and Constables Tanner and Ulrich. Richard now had a sword belt at his side and wore leather armor. Richard looked past Aramis, scanning the road to the west. What is it, Richard?
I'm looking for Lewis. He's disappeared.
The way Richard said disappeared, Aramis believed it had something to do with Edvard.
So are we. Father Joris killed Gloria Platt and most likely Greta as well. We want to get Lewis to help us locate and hopefully capture Father Joris.
Joris?
Richard had a shocked look on his face, as did Constable Tanner, but the normally unflappable Ulrich looked angry.
Why would he do that?
There's no time for that now. Where was Lewis headed?
The library, most likely.
Aramis grabbed Richard by the shoulder. Fine. We will find him. Richard, I need you to go back to the manor and tell your father about Joris. That Gloria left us proof that Joris killed her even as she died, and that he was probably behind Greta's death as well. He needs to know. Aaron pointed as he moved forward. Aramis, look! Richard had already turned to leave but stopped in his tracks as a battered and beaten Lon Garrett reached them, having approached from the west. The stablemaster fell into Aaron's arms, coughing up blood. Much of his face had been shredded, as if he had been clawed by a bear. One of his hands covered his neck, barely holding back his lifeblood. Aaron shouted, "Lon!" But the farrier slumped against Aaron, having passed out from the effort. Aaron bent his knees and fell to his side in an attempt to support Lon's weight. Aramis did not stop to help. He yelled back to Aaron as he ran in the direction of the town cemetery.
Aaron, try to stop his bleeding. We will be back soon.
Richard, his father forgotten, followed Aramis with Constables Ulrich and Tanner on their heels. It took only moments for the four men to reach the edge of the cemetery and to discover the worst had occurred. Had Constable Lewis lay on the ground, throat torn and bloodied. His legs lay askew. One of his arms was bent at an impossible angle, nearly ripped from its socket. Remarkably, he used his other hand to cover the gaping wound on his neck. Even more remarkable, Lewis still breathed. A sword rested at his side. It was bloodied as well. They next saw Shane Olivette lying face down on the ground. While his prostrate form prevented Aramis from learning how the damage was done, it was clear to all that Shane was dead. Surprise was an emotion Aramis Cragen had managed to avoid much of his life, but what occurred next caught him completely off guard. Richard Avedon ran to Lewis's side and fell to his knees. He began to reach out to help Lewis, but then stopped himself as he realized he had no idea what to do. Richard Avedon then let out a wail that shook Aramis to his core.
No! Uncle Lewis!
Driving back tears over his continued failings, Aramis reached Lewis's side very soon after Richard. Ignoring Richard for the moment, the monk forced the barely conscious Lewis to focus on his face.
Who did this to you? Joris?
A wild look of denial stared back at Aramis. The wound Lewis was failing to completely cover with his one good hand prevented any sound from escaping Lewis's mouth. He managed to mouth the words, "No," and "Lane."
Lane Nichols? She has returned? Why?
As Richard shouted to the sky in anger, Aramis noticed that Ulrich had drawn his sword and was looking towards the library.
Cletus came to the manor and told Lewis that Lane Nichols was back, that she had broken through the town gate and had run off towards the library.
And you did not go with Lewis?
Tanner responded.
We weren't there. Cletus stopped by the garrison on the way back from the manor and told us we'd better get over there. We didn't see Lewis on the way, but we met Richard as he exited the manor. It was then that he told us that Lewis had run off after speaking with Cletus.
As Tanner spoke, Lewis's angry stare never strayed from Richard's face.
Lewis's life-stealing wounds may have prevented sound from reaching Lewis's mouth, but the power behind his words struck Richard nonetheless. He mouthed the words, "Edvard? Richard? How could you?" Lewis coughed. Blood spurted from Lewis's mouth, striking Richard in the face.
Lewis's still defiant eyes lost their focus and his head fell back onto Richard's left hand. Aramis reached down and touched the other side of Lewis's neck. He could not feel a pulse. Knowing Lewis's love of Aj and Artus, Aramis prayed silently.
Artus, if you live with your father and not on Cairn, receive your fallen soldier. He earned his entry into your kingdom this day.
Aramis, still leaning over Lewis, was eye level with Richard.
Son, you need to go to your father, now. Tell him what has happened. We will deal with Lane first, and then Father Joris.
Richard opened his mouth in protest, but the look on Aramis's face was all it took to silence the oldest son of Lord Avedon. Richard moved his eyes from side to side without moving his head, tears mixing with his uncle's blood as they traveled down his face. Richard's expression then changed. His face hardened, not in anger, but with the strength and resolve one often receives when they make a heartfelt decision. Slowly, Richard stood and faced his two remaining constables.
Do whatever Sir Aramis orders you to do, without question.
As Aramis and the two constables turned to leave Richard, Aaron and a now-conscious Lon Garrett approached from the east. Much of Lon's head was wrapped in bandages, and Aaron supported Lon every step of the way, but the look in Lon's eyes told Aramis that nothing was going to keep the farrier from returning to his apprentice's side. Aaron helped Lon to the ground. The farrier then waved them all away.
Get that Taurine. She must pay Callan's toll for what she has done.
Aaron paused, unsure if he should leave Lon's side. Lon pointed past Aaron.
Leave me. I'll be fine. I've had worse than this from a hoof of a Grosian stallion. Go.
Aramis gave Richard one last look. Tears streaming, Richard sheathed his sword and ran off towards Avedon Manor. Aramis called out his orders.
Come to the library.
It was only a short distance to the library, but the changing elevation and the trees that lined the path hid the structure until they were less than an arrow's flight away. As a result, when they rounded the edge of a copse of trees, Aramis had the opportunity to be surprised once again. The library was burning. Smoke billowed from two holes that had already opened in the roof. The fire had clearly started inside the structure as the walls were just starting to smoke in several places. Aramis turned to the two constables.
We need people to help with the fire.
Ulrich looked at Aramis as if he were speaking another language.
What about the vampire? You need us.
Aramis stood as tall as possible but didn't reach Ulrich's chin.
Again, we do not have time for this. Aaron and I can take care of Lane Nichols, but the contents of that library are more valuable than you realize.
Ulrich did not back down. Richard's orders didn't carry as much weight as Aramis had hoped.
Tanner, where are the men that searched the tunnels earlier today?
Most are at the inn. Lewis asked Layla to set them up with dinner and ale for their efforts today.
Aramis began running towards the library. As the others followed, Aramis yelled,
Tanner! Go get those men to help with the fire!
Tanner broke off, running east. Ulrich responded with,
There is a well between the library and Lane's house. They keep buckets at the inn for just such an event. We'll stop the fire.
Ulrich's voice trailed off as his mouth fell open. Aramis had come to a stop and threw up his arms to bar the other two men from passing him. He needn't have bothered. The sight before them had stopped Aaron and Ulrich in their tracks. Ulrich was the first to regain his voice.
What in Aj's name?
Jilly Hemming, the baker's daughter, one-time best friend of Greta Platt, stood before the library, half-naked, dancing with her arms flailing about her. She hummed a tune as she danced, like it was the most natural event in the world to be gyrating in front of a burning building. The sight of Jilly transfixed the three men. She whirled and twirled as if performing some sort of ritual dance. It took a moment for Jilly's lack of clothing to register for Aramis, or at least the cause of it. To most, it may have appeared that Jilly had ripped most of her clothes off, but Aramis could now see that Jilly's current state was a result of her clothing having all but burned off of her, and Jilly's next actions confirmed Aramis's suspicions. Jilly stopped moving her feet and lowered her arms to her side. She turned to face the library door. Her hands rose up before her nearly bare chest, palms towards each other, as if she were holding a small, unseen ball the size of a grapefruit. From the angle he faced Jilly Hemming, Aramis couldn't see the girl's eyes, but could feel the fire in them. The fire he had seen, but not fully recognized 2 days before. Aramis yelled,
"No!"
and ran forward, pushing his arms against the chest of Aaron and Constable Ulrich, both driving himself forward and distancing himself from the two men at the same time. Concentration unbroken by Aramis's shout, Jilly held her right hand above her head. Her hand was now far from empty. The invisible grapefruit-sized globe was now a sphere of liquid fire. As Jilly held it above her head, strands of blistering heat dripped from the ball and onto her shoulder. Clothing that was unfortunate enough to touch this liquor immediately burned away. Jilly herself appeared unharmed by the fire, however. As Aramis ran at Jilly, the girl screamed in the direction of the library's open entrance. Aramis saw that the door had fallen inward, an obvious victim of Jilly's attacks.
"You bitch! You killed my Greta! You killed my Shane!"
Aramis realized that he was not going to make it to Jilly before she hurled the sphere of fire. At the same time, he realized that the distance was such that there would be nothing he could do if Jilly decided to loose this missile in his direction. But Jilly was as oblivious to Aramis's loud approach as she had been to his shout. She released the ball of fire, hurling it at the library's doorway. It left her hand and arced, landing just beyond the opening, breaking into several smaller orbs. Aramis had no idea what happened to the pieces after that. At that moment, he ran headlong into Jilly Hemming, tackling her to the ground.
"Damn, girl, what have you done?"
Constable Ulrich stood over an unconscious Jilly. Aramis stood between them and the library's entrance, watching the fire spread even faster.
"She cannot hear you, Constable."
Ulrich looked at Aramis, about to retort that he knew as much, but Aramis did not allow him the opportunity.
"Ulrich, I suggest you do what you must to keep her from regaining consciousness, lest she attempt to cause harm to something other than a building."
The monk turned to Aaron.
"Stay here, no matter what."
Before Aaron could respond, Aramis Cragen charged into the burning library. The heat was nearly unbearable. Flames had engulfed several walls and most of the ceiling. Streaks of burnt carpet and wood crisscrossed the floor of the library, left by Jilly's orbs of fire as they had fractured and bounced off in all directions. The drop from the main landing near the library entrance had provided the orbs even more acceleration, allowing the spheres to travel to seemingly every corner of the floor. A wall of fire stretched across the floor, which separated Aramis from the main reading area. He held an arm across his forehead in an attempt to beat back some of the heat that would soon become intolerable. Aramis made out the form of Lane Nichols through the flames. Lane's dress smoldered. Her arms were filled with books, and she carried cloth sacks overflowing with scrolls and other loose papers. Aramis knew this was going to end badly, but understood what drove Lane better than anyone. Against his better judgment, Aramis was touched by Lane's actions. Without a second thought, Aramis ran forward and jumped through the flames. Fire licked at Aramis. He felt the wood floor, already compromised by the fire threatening to overwhelm the library, crack in places as he landed. Before he could even start a roll meant to disperse his weight across the weakened floor, a strong hand had him by the neck, lifting him above the ground. Aramis could not speak. Lane was crushing his throat. He could still look into Lane's eyes, however, and hoped she was not too far gone to hear his thoughts.
"Lane, let me help you.
The books that Lane had dropped in order to grasp Aramis by the throat were already being touched by the flames now underneath Aramis's dangling feet. Lane squealed.
I had to come back.
I know.
The vice around Aramis's neck loosened slightly, but not enough for him to escape Lane's grasp. Lane's grip had not weakened due to any feeling she had for the monk. Aramis could now see that just below Lane's heart, along her ribcage, was a wound that would have rendered any mortal being immobile. Lane saw Aramis staring at her chest.
Like what you see, Aramis?
She began to laugh at her own joke, but the effort morphed into a cough.
Damned gatekeeper. I should have killed him, but I figured he would be too scared to move after I broke through the gate. I could have been in and out of here before anyone ever knew.
But Lewis found out and he came to find you. Why did you kill him?
I was returning to the library for more books.
The ceiling was now completely ablaze. A small, burning beam fell, landing on a nearby bookshelf. Lane cursed and dropped Aramis to the floor, quickly retrieving several items that she must have considered the most valuable.
Lewis and the other two men met me at the fork. I didn't see him at first. I was unfocused. The stableman came at me with his scythe. He was not a threat. But then Lewis ran me through with his sword. I merely defended myself after that. I'm not proud, but they chose to attack me. And as a final affront, I reach the library and I'm attacked by a wilder.
Aramis picked up several of the items Lane had dropped to the floor.
Lane, I am sorry. In another life.
And what exactly do you plan on doing, Sir Aramis?
Aramis leaped back through the flames, arms full. The trailing edge of his robes caught fire on this jump, but the flames trailed behind him as he ran towards the exit. Not pausing, Aramis cast a final thought at Lane.
Follow me and you will be destroyed.
Lane Nichols had been wounded several times during her second life, but never like this. Her creator, a vampire master and officer in the army of Yu, had nearly disemboweled her in a fit of anger.
But that night she had been prepared for his attack, and with the help of her two sisters, it had meant the end of Lucien Taillefer.
It had taken several days to recover from the cut that had opened her torso, but her sisters had helped her through that pain as well. But now, over 100 years later, her sisters long ago taken to Callan's Abyss, no one would come to help her.
As soon as that bastard Joris hears of this, he'll hunt me across all of Cairn.
She had expended too much energy on Aramis. Lane's blood, the life force that maintained her hold in this world, was draining out of her. The wound itself would not end her existence. The fire would do the rest. Lane spun around, gasping in pain. The whole room was now ablaze, her own special funeral pyre.
Not to worry, Aramis Cragan. I have no intentions of exiting through that door.
Lane Nichols, not so graceful as in days past, limped towards the stairs that led to the stone-walled library basement. Aaron extinguished the flames that had ruined another set of Aramis's robes. During Aramis's short time in the library, Hemming, Kaj, Herr Jar, and Alice Wenk had all arrived at the scene. In the distance, Aramis spotted Constable Tanner returning with several men, all carrying buckets. Other than Hemming, who sat on the ground holding his unconscious daughter, the rest of the men appeared ready to tackle the fire. Aramis addressed the closer of the two constables.
Ulrich, you need to take some men over to Lane's home. If she makes it to the tunnel under...
Before Aramis could finish his thought, a small concussion shattered every remaining window of the library, sending glass in all directions. Aaron in particular was shocked by the sight. Aramis continued.
Lane will try to escape the same way she did before, through her...
A great rumbling explosion, actually several blasts, one after the other, much more powerful than the first concussion, flew out the north and western walls of the library, sending wood, stone, and plaster primarily in those two directions. Everyone near the building was knocked from their feet. One of the men that had come to help with the fire had his head removed from his body for his trouble, decapitated by a flaming oak beam. In addition to the dismantling of the library, the blasts also caused a great section of ground to the east of the building to both collapse and explode upward at the same instant, as if some great whale was erupting through the surface of the ocean. The blast uprooted a tree and sent it flying through the air. It landed harmlessly in some bushes near the well. Ulrich and Aaron regained their feet, but well after Aramis, who stood away from them, staring at the shattered remains of the library in disgust.
So, the circle is complete, huh, Ari?
This time it was only Gareth's voice in his head, and not the visage Aramis usually found smiling back at him.
Explosives. Some tunnel near the library, most likely. Set off by the fire, going off one after another.
I'll see you again someday, my friend. I must go now.
Yes, it is time for you to go.
Aramis clenched his fists. Gareth laughed one final time.
Don't hurt anyone you're not supposed to, Ari.
I'm afraid I cannot promise that, old friend.
The explosion did serve one purpose. The structure that had fueled the fire was no longer there, so the raging fire had nearly extinguished itself when the explosion scattered the wood in all directions. Smoldering material lay strewn around the men that had arrived on the scene. They began to gather water from the nearby well in order to put out the smaller fires around them. On the other side of the library, Hollis Wink was found pinned under a bookcase. Herjar lifted the bookcase by himself, and Hollis crawled out, amazingly, uninjured. Aramis turned back to Ulrich.
I doubt Lane survived that, but take three experienced men over to her home and search for her.
Ulrich frowned.
You're not coming?
No, Aaron and I have somewhere to go. Even if Lane somehow made it to safety before that blast, she is gravely injured. Lewis ran her through before she killed him. As long as you work together, you should be fine.
Aramis walked away from Ulrich, leading Aaron by the arm.
What is it, Aramis?
Aramis picked up the pace, directing Aaron down a path that led to the front of town.
Marissa.
Centuries ago, what became my order sealed magic away from the world to stop the greatest threat we had ever known, an ancient dragon called Zahak. 2 years ago, the seal was broken, bringing back the magic and the old enemy, but also new heroes. We sealed the magic away again, defeating the enemy at the cost of those heroes and over 50 mages of the Ordo Nox, my husband among them. We never considered that we might have failed. But even as new heroes rise with the strengthening magic, the local children are disappearing. Is this something to do with the old enemy, or something even more dangerous?
Arcadian Gate, an urban fantasy supers podcast novel by Mark Kinney, launching in early 2009. Learn more at www.mark-kinney.info.
And that was the promo for Mark Kinney's Arcadian Gate. Mark Kinney is one of the hosts of All Games Considered, one of the best RPG podcasts out there. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does with this podcast.
Hi, PJ. This is Kim, the comic book goddess of far too many podcasts. And I wanted to let you know I was still listening, even though I've consumed your book about four times already. I'm still hearing neat little foreshadowing and things that I would have noticed if this was my first time through. So it's very, very cool. And no music this time. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
PG! Hey, I got it right this time. Great episode. Really enjoying it. Sorry I haven't been around on the website too much recently. Well, you know, life happens. And I'll be back on there soon, clogging up the airways there. This is Thomas, by the way. I figured you knew that already, but I don't think most of the other people did. Great job. Looking forward to the end. And keep up the great work. Loving, absolutely loving the Flinchy story in the Mexican show truck. It is way cool. I've already subscribed to it, so, and I haven't listened to the new episode yet. I have it on my iPod. I'm going to listen to that next. Keep putting it out. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, PG. This is Scott Roche. I just wanted to send you this little audio file and wish you a Merry Christmas. I'm glad that I was able to help you along with others in getting that audio edited right there towards the end. But whether you get it out for Christmas or not, I just hope you have taken some time to relax, decompress from the stresses of being a dad and being a podcaster and daily life, and just have taken some time to reflect on the season and connect with family and friends. Look forward to hearing what you've got going on in the future, and I'll see you on Twitter. Bye.
Thanks so much, Kim, Thomas, and Scott. Even though I did work hard to get this episode out on Christmas Day, I have had a great week relaxing this week, visiting with family, and pretty much being unplugged from the internet all week long. I just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making 2008 a truly special year for me. From appearing on my first panels at conventions, to getting a short story read by Matt Selznick during his Brave Men Run release party, and not to mention all of the emails, voicemails, reviews, book sales, donations from you guys. This has just been an incredible year for me. Thank you so, so very much. And I can promise you one thing, 2009 is going to be even better. Hopefully I have some news to share with you guys in the next few weeks, and that's going to get 2009 off to a great start. And stay tuned, because we've got 4 episodes left. Got episode 39 and then the big one, episode 40, within the next 2 or 3 weeks. It's going to be great. Have a great holiday season. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
So we're going to tell you the story.
And I'm here to make sure he tells you the truth.
Truth? Nobody wants the truth. They want a good story.
But this is non-fiction.
Okay, George Washington, take it away with the Truthliosity Parade.
What? Flinchy and the Mexican Show Truck. Listen now at theshawnakee.com.
Okay, seriously, what kind of person names a podcast something that no one knows how to spell? Well, that would be me. So, The Shawnakee. TheShawnakee.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this podcast and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com, Kevin McLeod through incompetech.com, and David Beard through davidbeardmusic.com. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review at iTunes and on podiobooks.com. And become part of the show by leaving a message on the Karen line at 704-315-5884. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008, P.G. Holyfield, and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works, 3.5 U.S. license.
This is Justin McCumber from the Dead Robots Society podcast, and you're listening to Murder at Avalon Hill.
Avedon.
What?
Avedon, not Avalon. Avalon was King Arthur.
And what's this?
The script says, a murder mystery fantasy story by P.G. Holyfield.
Wait. PG, is that like his rating or something? Like no sex or violence?
That must get boring. You'd have to have a more fun name like R Holyfield or Triple X Holyfield.
Significant other sure would.
Anyway, listen and enjoy. And if you'd like to read the book, head to your local bookstores.
Yeah, about that. He's not actually available straight off the shelf.
Oh? I thought his book was out.
Well, it is, just not, you know, like, in stores.
But he's on Amazon, right? Barnes & Noble online?
No.
Then where can we get his book?
Lulu.
Lulu? My cat has a book on Lulu.
Hey, it's legit. You know what? Screw you guys. PG, you rock, and so does your podcast. Listeners, enjoy.
Yeah, Pally. I got 2 episodes posting in a row, so suck on that. Moravi.net.